Good afternoon and welcome to the regular briefing by the Baker Polito administration led by Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito to the municipal CEOs from all across Massachusetts on COVID-19. This series of briefings, updates, and question and answers started at the very beginning of the pandemic and continues today. I'm Jeff Beckwith, the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Municipal Association. We deeply appreciate all of the resources, time, attention, and partnership that the administration has provided and will continue to provide to all of you. Just a few logistical reminders. The Lieutenant Governor will start, provide the main briefing, and then we'll go into a question and answer period. We're joined by officials from the Department of Public Health, including Assistant Commissioner Jana Ferguson and Dr. Larry Madoff, the Medical Director for DPH. We also have Sean Cronin, the Senior Deputy Commissioner, heading the Division of Local Services to answer financial questions. And as always, the MMA is recording this session. An audio recording will be posted on the MMA website. There will be a summary article of this discussion that will be posted on our website later today or early tomorrow. In addition to that, when we do questions and answers, we encourage folks to use the chat function. We won't use raised hands, just the chat function. Please paste your question for panelists and attendees so that everyone can see the questions. We'll get to as many of them as we possibly can. So with all of that said, Lieutenant Governor, thank you so much for your leadership during this pandemic and turn the briefing over to you. The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, Jeff, and to your team for hosting once again. We appreciate this hour of time where we listen and learn from all of you who are hearing from your constituents, our shared constituents, about the matters that are top of mind and help us better, you know, troubleshoot, address bottlenecks, and streamline the delivery of services relative to COVID and other services that everyone is engaged in delivering here in the Commonwealth at your level. I'm here in Central Mass because it's snowing. And if many of you are sort of tied more to your local locations because we don't do as traveling today, it's literally winter wonderland in the central part of the state. And it just gives me a reason to say thank you to all the DPW workers out there who've done an amazing job this winter to keep us safe on the roads. And thank you for managing through these snow events that undoubtedly are coming our way because it's winter. So let's start with some updates. And I believe that Jane Ferguson and Dr. Madoff and Sean Cronin here to address any specific questions. And I see that the chat is lighting up with some thoughts. So first and foremost, it's about a week now that we have opened eligibility to our 75-year-old citizens and more. And we want to thank you for your tremendous efforts for helping them access the vaccines. I do want to acknowledge that we have over 125 public vaccination clinics throughout the Commonwealth. Many of them are led by you as a local community or you and your counterparts in your region leading this effort. Big shout out to all the councils on aging and your boards of health for your hard work, especially over this past week in addressing the needs of the older population of your community. Really appreciate your assistance. We also, as you know, last Friday, launched the call center for individuals 75 and older to use as an alternate to the website. Someone has difficulty accessing the website or accessing the website and having difficulty navigating it. We wanted to remove that barrier and set up the vaccine scheduling resource line, which is open Monday to Friday, 8:30 to 5, and the call center may be accessed through 211. And we have over 500 live representatives who can support the effort in English and Spanish and translators for over 100 languages. So this was really important to do, obviously, because we wanted to make sure that our over 75s get their appointments scheduled. That level of certainty is really important. We're getting some feedback about the hours of the call center, and we are considering expanding that so that more people can be able to get the assistance in scheduling these appointments. Apparently, through this process, over 2,000 appointments have been booked. So that's really good. The volume this morning was around 4,000 calls. So just to give you a sense of who's using the call center, there's quite a few people. If no appointments are available when the person does engage with a caller at the call center, there is a callback list for the appointment to be scheduled when there's an appointment available at a MassVac site that might be closer to where you are. So proximity for a lot of older people is important. And if the area that they live within at that MassVac site, if there's not an appointment, they will be on a callback list to be able to get an appointment at that site closer to them. So that's also important. Supply is limited. We've been talking about that on this call week to week. We are receiving 103,400 doses weekly. So our demand is four times that. Just to put into the context of the world in which we live in terms of the doses coming to the Commonwealth and what the demand is. As of last Sunday, we were close to 160,000 doses administered and 1.2 million doses have been shipped. To bring more clarity to this, the daily doses shipped and administered will be produced daily on the website. So you'll be able to see that information. And it appears that we've surpassed our benchmark for phase two. So we obviously want to measure our progress relative to the doses shipped to the state and the rate at which they are being administered. And we also want you to be able to see what that looks like. So that information will be available on a daily basis. As you may know, we have the 7 MassVac sites that are up and running. There will be 2 more VAC sites announced very soon. The details relative to organizing the contract and dotting the I's and crossing the T's is underway for those additional 2 MassVac sites. They're easy, they're efficient, they're streamlined. The governor and I have had a chance to visit a couple of them now. They're very orderly and very efficient. So there's the end of the day, there's no wasted or unused vaccine. That is certainly something that's really important. They're very efficient and very safe for people to utilize. Pharmacies also are a convenient option. They post appointments daily. They're totaling about 15,500 a week. Retail pharmacies at your Stop and Shop, your Hannaford's, your Wegmans, your Big Y, your Price Chopper, they post 4,600 appointments weekly. Our MassVac sites are at about 55,000 appointments weekly. So just to give you a sense of how many appointments are available and where gives you a sense of how this is working. Last week, 8 new Walgreens locations were opened, and this week, an additional 30 pharmacy sites will add around 21,000 appointments. So that's important for you to continue to monitor. We also heard from you about let's get the word out. It's really important that there's a high take-up rate among those who are eligible for the vaccine and our over 75-year-old population that's been activated. So we worked hard on the campaign message, actually surveyed 1,000 residents to determine the key motivators and barriers about the vaccine. And we incorporated that messaging into the campaign. with trusted voices. We also heard in our survey that, you know, doctors and medical professionals are the most trusted voices, not the governor day to day when he's at his press avails, but doctors and the medical professionals that are involved in delivering our care are the trusted voices. That's why the campaign called Trust the Facts, Get the Vax, you have an array of medical professionals and diversity represented among those medical professionals delivering the message. Now, I don't know about you, but my pre-game activity on Sunday was to get in front of the TV early so I could see the launch of the Trust the Facts, Get the Vax campaign. The campaign started right around that time, and I hope that you've been able to see it, and not only see it, but use it. You are also trusted voices in your community. People look to you to know what and where and how, and to be able to share this message and get it out there is really important. As I said, it's in English and Spanish. It's appearing on multiple radio stations, multilingual radio stations, in social media. And there's access to over 100 translators as well. So it's just another tool to put in your toolkit. Just shifting gears a little bit. As we all know, we've been monitoring the 7-day average of cases. It's actually down 59% from the peak. And the 7-day positive test rate is at 2.96%. And hospitalizations and ICUs capacities also down. We monitor that with our hospital CEOs at our daily calls, and the governor and I and others twice a week. And it's verified in real time with them. That accomplishment is a collection of a lot of hard work, not only the citizens of the Commonwealth, but you as local officials doing a lot around your messaging and encouraging compliance and doing your part. We are very grateful to all of you for that hard work. As you know, at 5 a.m. on Monday, the change in the status occurred. The stay-at-home advisory and early business closure was previously lifted, and the capacity was also increased to 40%. We remain at step one, phase three. The gathering limit remains a 10-person indoors and 25 outdoors, and it applies to events and private gatherings. The 40% limit for restaurants and close contact personal services does not include employees, so they are exempted from that 40% calculation. That should be noted. For small businesses, they go by a limit of 8 people per 1,000 square feet. And there's no capacity limits on manufacturing, construction, and laboratories. That continues. We'll continue to review the data. The science is what dictates our decisions. And we'll obviously look at what other states are doing as well as a benchmark to signal what next steps we take relative to our reopening. While we do that and get more of this vaccine out to the people of our Commonwealth, it's important that we support the hardest hit sectors of our economy. You know who they are in your community, your Main Street, small shops and restaurants. The business community that you are in touch with needs all of our support. We have the largest small business program that's been rolling out over these last weeks. A lot of that was designed with input from all of you. It's a $720 million program. We're close to about 10,000 businesses who have received grants from the program being administered from the Mass Growth Capital Corp. We also share with you weekly the names of the businesses receiving the grant so that you can continue to monitor in your community who's receiving what and who has not yet received or maybe hasn't applied and how we can help them. In this most recent round, we hit some of those industry-specific sectors, like over 1,300 restaurant, bars, caterers, and food trucks received grants, 1,200 businesses in personal care in the beauty sector, 554 independent retailers, 462 event support companies, gyms and fitness, indoor recreation and entertainment venues. So I just want to thank you for your partnership with that. Mass Growth Capital team took to heart making sure that this was a fast turnaround, getting these dollars into the hands of the business community, small business in particular, so they can pay their rent, meet their payroll, literally keep the lights on as we navigate through these challenges over the upcoming weeks. So let's continue to work together there. This morning, Adam Chapdelaine, the president of your organization, was able to attend a virtual, sad, signing of the economic development bill, but we did mark that moment. And I just want to thank all of you for your advocacy for the kinds of programs that you know you need to rely on to rebuild and rebound in your communities. We also want to thank you for your leadership regarding housing choice that's contained in that economic development bill that was virtually and ceremonially signed today. Obviously focusing on housing development and thinking about some of your main streets and downtowns, or maybe even office buildings that might not be used in the same way they were pre-pandemic, and starting to think about the changes in uses that will be inevitable because of how people work and where they work. Thinking about, you know, skill development, talent clearly drives our economy, and the entrepreneurial spirit and the creativity and ingenuity that exists among from our smallest to largest businesses. The community development strategies that we partner on, and clearly being competitive as a commonwealth as we recover from this pandemic has always been our edge, and we want to continue to be competitive and smart about how we move forward over these upcoming months. I want to just put a plug out that yesterday, the expression of interest was released. Now, this was part of our program that we announced a couple of weeks ago, the Community One Stop, to access the key resource buckets. There's 10 of them that US community leaders, economic development leaders, knowing your business partners can access in order to take those projects and those ideas that you have for your community and put them into action, because there'll be state resources to match municipal and private resources to get these projects underway and completed. So I would take advantage of looking at that expression of interest, gathering your team, and, you know, starting to lay out your thoughts about what those, say, five major projects are in your community that you want to see move forward. The expression of interest is available through April 21. And you have a whole team of people at HED, as well as Sean Cronin, who are going to act as your, not act, but be your consulting team during this process. You might have an idea and not be sure, is this something I should put down on my expression of interest? You can ask Sean Cronin that, or engage the HED team, start to really map this out. And then when the applications are available in June, you'll just be that much further ahead and be able to make sure that your application is as crisp and as competitive as possible to be able to access the funds within the one stop. So it eliminates that step about which program should I compete for these funds in, and the sort of uncertainty around at the end of that process, not getting a grant and then having to feel like you have to start over again. So this is going to streamline that process. It couldn't come at a better time than now. And I think it'll give your team something really positive to work on as we plan to recover. I know you have a number of questions about COVID, and probably in particular, the vaccination distribution and the role of your local boards of health in your community. Again, I want to stress our gratefulness for reaching the hardest to serve in your community, those who are homebound, those who might have different abilities and need our special assistance, your senior housing and low-income housing facilities. Just thank you for all of your work there, and We'll continue to work with you and partner with you. And I just want to end with thank you for your patience. None of this is easy for any one of us. We try to make the best decisions with the information that's available. And if we learn about a different approach or a better approach, we listen and we make adjustments. And we will continue to do that as we move forward together to meet the challenges and the demands that exist community to community across our Commonwealth. So thank you. And I'll turn it back over to Jeff, and then we can begin our discussion.
Great. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. There's a lot there. I do want to, again, express our appreciation for your announcing the Community One Stop for Growth program at the MMA annual meeting last month and for the webinar that's posted on the MMA website. And also you have a whole resource page on your state website so communities can get more information on the process and so on. That's an exciting new initiative. So thank you very much for that. We have a number of questions in the chat. We'll try and get to as many of them as we can. And we'll work through the first, and some of these are so long, I'll do my best to summarize appropriately. So there's for Lieutenant Governor, for you and your team, if you could talk more about the decision to focus on having a large mass evacuation sites versus a more dispersed process of working through the municipalities for local clinics. There is in particular a concern, especially during this round, about the challenge of getting 75 and older residents if they have to travel multiple towns over or in other areas of the state where you're working to set up, I think the goal is as many as 165 different sites across the state soon. There are questions also about accessing. So if you could talk a little bit about the model that you have and why you think that works and the role that you see for municipalities, because there are lots of cities and towns in the chat that are expressing interest in setting up their own full-scale local clinics.
Okay. Let me sort of give you the overview, and Jaina can fill in some more of the details. So we've learned that the mass vac sites are the most efficient and are set up to administer large amounts of doses easy, safely, efficiently, and not have at the end of a day, for instance, a leftover that has to be managed. It's just highly efficient. Which is really important now as we address those people who are eligible for the vaccine, but also as we head into the general population, being able to turn out these doses quickly. Right now we're dealing with Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, and there will be a day, hopefully not too far from now, when J&J gets advanced through the federal approval process, which is a one dose, and we'll be able to use those mass vac sites to get them out, the doses out fast. Right now, these mass vac sites, as you are sort of in your holding space for that 15 minutes to make sure that you don't have a reaction to the dose, you can make your second appointment, and it's just easy and efficient. Now, that doesn't work for everybody in terms of travel or mobility issues, or maybe even convenience. So we also support and see the regional efforts really working well. I mean, you take Berkshire County as an example, where they set up a regional collaborative with their healthcare providers and have been top performers in getting a high number of doses out to residents of their county since the beginning of this. And then the next is obviously our pharmacy partners and our retail pharmacy partners. And those continue to expand every week. You heard in my opening remarks, more of those sort of retail closer sites available. But they don't get the volume of doses
so they don't have as many appointments available. Those do fill up quickly. So for the role of the local boards of health, your councils on aging, are really to make sure that the hardest to serve in your community are reached. You know who they are. You, for instance, have a Meals on Wheels program. So you know through that program who's homebound and who has limitations around mobility. You also know your senior housing, and you know your low-income housing and who there is eligible for the vaccine. So we'd like you to continue to work to serve those populations in your community. And the preference is for you to think regionally about that effort. I use the Berkshire County example, but there are a lot of other regional collaborations that either formed before today or are continuing to form that we would incentivize and encourage you to think about who your regional partners are and using a regional approach to distributing a vaccine as well. For residents who might be a little more mobile, but they don't want to go to a mass vac site for whatever the reason is that they're concerned about. So think mass vac site, large populations, highly efficient, easy to access, a lot of volume in terms of doses. Regional sites for people that don't want to really want to go that far, but really want to be in my area. You got your retail, you know, CVS, Walgreens, your retail pharmacies, and then the local boards of health really serving the needs and meeting people where they are in your community that have a hard time getting around or that are homebound and that need to be served. So that's how I generally understand it from Secretary Sutter's vision. And then it's like, okay, so now how is this going to work? How am I going to get the doses? How can I be certain that I'm going to get those doses? What's the next thing? And that's what I want Jaina to share with you, because she's the point person that gets a lot of this incoming from me. When I get a text message from one of you, I send it off to Jaina and she does her magic and she gets back to you and tries to make this work. So there's more to it than how I explained it, but I want Jaina to just fill in a little bit more detail.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying magic. It's I'm afraid I'm all not always able to do that. This is I think you summarized it actually really well. The demonstrated success, and sometimes when you look at also the comparisons to how other states are doing it and everything, the demonstrated success is to really, the public health effort is to vaccinate as many people as quickly as possible, because that's how you end the pandemic. And so these highly efficient efforts through the vaccination sites are really productive ways of getting people vaccinated. And I know there have been some rumors about, you know, leftover appointments or something along those lines. As you probably heard, and Lieutenant Governor talked about it, in terms of like assisting people over the age of 75, in particular, the 2-1-1 call center is assisting seniors who are over the age of 75 who can't easily navigate the website to make appointments. They're helping those individuals schedule appointments. And in the cases where, for example, there are no appointments currently, you know, at that time to be found because appointments are loaded weekly, they are putting people on a wait list and then calling them back in a first come, first serve way for the mass vaccination sites. So it's actually, you know, if there is a, you know, an occasional vacancy, there are a lot of people in the waiting list that can be, you know, directed to those appointments. It's a way for us to triage you know, people who are trying to get a vaccine who maybe weren't able to be helped in that one particular day. So we do reach back out to them. This is similar to the roles that councils on aging can provide within your communities. I know there's a comment in the chat about some councils on aging being being directed not to provide that type of assistance. The Commonwealth is doing it. We don't share those concerns in terms of you know, what an attestation would be, because the person is calling us to assist them and giving us that information. So we are, you know, seeing a role for municipalities to assist seniors in the same kind of way, particularly given the fact that the Massachusetts website can allow people to see a lot of different vaccination opportunities. So again, you know, some of these counties, highly efficient, but also countywide services, in some cases, also available to everybody in the state. That's another kind of key benefit for some of these partnerships, is that, you know, people can access appointments in different areas. So, you know, just wanted to address a little bit of that. The allocation decisions, because we are getting so many more requests for vaccine than the state gets in, and understand that the vaccine the state is allocated goes to everybody, right? It goes to hospitals, it goes to pharmacies, it goes to healthcare centers, it goes to community health centers, local health departments, it gets distributed all over Massachusetts. We can't fill all the requests for vaccine that we receive each week. And so it has meant that some municipalities haven't been able to get enough vaccine to kind of meet what they would like to do. And that can be stressful. This is not a comment on the quality of the plan that a municipality might have, but it is about how some of this other structure can better fill those needs, I think. And so really would like municipalities to focus on just the really hard to reach populations, and to, we're providing more assistance and we're responding to recommendations for improvements about how to make these locations more accessible to people. And of course, we're not just talking about seniors, we're still also talking about all the people in phase one who are eligible, and we are preparing for the rest of the priority groups. But we do recognize this as a particular concern to people who are over the age of 75. We also recommend that, would love to see municipalities partner with their low-income senior housing. There is a vaccine kind of allocation made available for that. And if you have low-income and affordable senior housing in your community, and they are looking for partners, this is a fantastic role for municipalities to be partnering with them. And we can manage that allocation to make sure that those are available.
And Jana, you touched on this, so I'm just going to ask you to give a little more visibility into the allocation decision regarding the allotment that's provided to municipalities. What's that process that you've been using? Just because a couple of questions came up from that in the chat.
Sure. So it's actually, there are a lot of inputs into that decision. There are, you know, again, kind of commitments to certain channels for people to get vaccine, like these vaccination sites and the pharmacies and the hospitals and the doctor's offices, et cetera. In addition to that, there's a consideration about whether or not that particular, institution, for lack of a better word, or agency provider is the word we use. That doesn't always mean something to people. So it's a vaccine provider is actually using up their allotment that they've received. So if there's excess inventory in stock, or people haven't been reporting that they've been administering vaccines, that looks like there's vaccine on hand. So if somebody makes a request and they have vaccine on hand, perhaps that will go into the allocation decision. There are other considerations. There are multiple other considerations that go into that. But in terms of the municipalities, some of the key factors were kind of location near a mass vaccination site. The Commonwealth, as you know, has made a very strategic decision to address health equity issues. And so communities that had been disproportionately impacted by COVID have a kind of an additional amount of vaccine available to them so they can meet those needs. There are countywide systems. Those have vaccine because they serve a lot of people. For example, the Berkshire County and Barnstable County coalitions have received vaccine to serve their populations because they're not close to mass vaccination sites. And then, you know, there are people who had indicated that they wanted to be a public clinic, Those public clinics were, you know, we asked people to come forward to say they wanted to be on the map, so they wanted to be accessible for people to be able to schedule for appointments, and those were also things that our team works with in order to try to make sure that there's vaccine available for those appointments.
Okay, can I just add one more to that? We have 351 cities and towns. If every community set up a clinic, we would not have enough doses, yeah, or the sort of the bandwidth to manage that with 351 separate operations. So from a logistics standpoint, that would be very difficult. So what's happened is you have some communities that have set up local clinics, and a lot of this started back in January when we had first responders to help get the front line dosed twice. And we're grateful for that. And then some of those continued on a mission to address the over 75s within their community or the more vulnerable populations that we know are homebound. What we're seeing that is more of a need is to have clinics that are close by, but we can't have every community have one. So some community might have a clinic, but the next community over doesn't. And then you're starting to get, well, how come I don't have one? And it's creating some tension there. We think the regional approach, we've talked about this regional approach on a lot of different things, is more efficient for the command center to be able to determine how to distribute doses, but also it will provide residents of that area access to a larger clinic that's nearby. It might not be right in their community, but it's not as far as a mass vac site. So mass vac sites, volume, regional, filling in the gaps, demonstrating your ability to collaborate, is an efficient way the command center can get doses to a regional effort. And then the local boards of health, knowing the most vulnerable, meeting people where they are in your community. You might even have a mobile service for that. And obviously retail and pharmacies are adding more doses every single week. And that's part of our relationship with the federal government to streamline that process. That's been a bumpy process, as you may have seen the governor articulate at our press conferences.
Thank you very much.
And I don't know, Janet, if there's anything you could add more about a regional collaboration. So if there's municipal leaders on this call saying, well, I could partner up with these five communities, how should they begin to think about that? And what initial guidance would you give them?
Sure, I appreciate that. So, you know, some of the communities have done regional planning in the past around, you know, kind of emergency preparedness and other things. So I think the local health departments are really well poised to be working together with your partnering communities. But, you know, I would look at some number of things like, you know, are you close to a mass vaccination site? Probably doesn't make sense for you to go through all of the effort to stand up something very comparable nearby. It should be, you know, so it should be in an area. If you look at the map, perhaps there are gap areas where your residents are, you know, are challenged to access a kind of a nearby vaccination, other opportunities. So, and want to reiterate, for some communities, like, there's not a mass vaccination site. When you look at the map, there are mass vaccination sites, but there are also other kind of high throughput locations that are comparable, even if they're not generating the same kind of numbers of vaccine appointments a day. So those are really important to kind of consider in terms of where to place a regional site. Work together, think about a plan. We want to say that something like that should be able to vaccinate quite a number of people a day. You know, some of the health departments are vaccinating subject to vaccine availability. Everybody's subject to vaccine ability, but some are going, you know, 750 to 1500 a day. That's the kind of throughput you would want to be able to sustain in order to support this public health effort. This is a public health initiative to vaccinate Massachusetts. And so, you know, this is, so you'd want high throughput. The regional approach is also nice because it allows everybody to access the vaccines in that area. No geographic boundaries would be preferred because, you know, some of the things we've been hearing about in the news are, you know, people showing up at a vaccination clinic, getting turned away. You hear about it in the paper. You know, it's that's problematic, right? So we'd want them to be open to everybody. There is also a preference, the benefit of collaborating together also is you have supports. So if like one person is out sick, the clinic doesn't have to shut down. There's a lot of supports built into that. So it's more effective in that way as well. And, you know, pull together a regional plan, get information about where you might want this located, the hours of the days of operation, what your capacity could do, and send that to the Department of Public Health. We'll take a look at it. We'll kind of compare it to the need. And we'll approve those. And, you know, what we are doing is approving that in consideration of like the doses of vaccine that are available too. Also indicate, you know, what kind of vaccine you can take. So like those are all things that people can be pulling together in order to do a regional collaboration. Some of them have done that. Like I said, there's some great partnerships. I would also, you know, I would hate to like leave out Franklin County, who is doing something similar. There are some really great area partnerships. It's also kind of because these things are located, you know, in an area, it also allows people to do some marketing toward their community. So it isn't like, you know, that's missing. That can still be a part of it, but they should be open to everybody in order to improve access to all of us, because that's really our effort here. It's the state's effort.
And just to repeat the number you had mentioned as a target, is it 750 doses a day at a regional collaboration?
Yeah, I think some of that capacity is really what we're looking for. And I think the health departments can do that. And certainly, I know there's some stuff in the chat about, you know, fire and EMTs and stuff like that. You know, we could certainly partner with them, but we want it to be a partnership. The local health departments are required to, are the only ones who can technically use our operating system, PrepMod operating system. That's part of our legal agreement with PrepMod. They can add users, so fire departments and EMTs and stuff can be added. But they have to be the site administrators per our legal agreement. So, you know, there are all sorts of partnerships that people can pull in together in order to do this. And then, you know, also as Lieutenant Governor mentioned, you know, your populations, particular people who are homebound, will need special assistance.
So can I just add one more to that? You said the partnerships that can be available as part of a regional collaborative. How about ambulance service having mobile capacity, sure, to bring vaccine to a targeted population within that region? Is that an example?
Sure. Yeah, of course. You know, that would be another way to get vaccine to people. And it's very successful, particularly people who cannot get to other vaccination sites. But it should be that last mile, right? It should be how we reach people who are really unable to get to these other vaccination sites.
I appreciate all the time that we're spending on vaccines. I will want to have time for some non-vaccine questions. Just notice in the chat, and just remind all of our members that the administration copies this chat and listens to and takes to heart all of the input and comments that are provided by all of you at these briefings. And in reading through lots of the comments, there's this real just passion, this desire to serve the residents of their community, and especially with the 75 plus category, the group, these are folks who really are motivated. They want to have vaccines. That there will be a different challenge later on in this process as we're trying to get to those communities where there's greater vaccine resistance, and it will almost be the reverse as we're trying to push vaccines out. So this is an evolving management and leadership challenge. The MMA takes it to heart when we see so many local leaders standing up saying that that they are just so desperate to do whatever they can in their communities. Jana, just at some point, if you could put in the chat how communities can contact you or the DPH to find out where's a regional effort near me that we could potentially join, or who to contact about establishing a regional approach. So please, it would be great to put that in the chat. There were some questions about municipal employees and just asking about how teachers and public works employees fit into the prioritization process. We know the next group are 65 and older with two complex medical conditions, and then teachers and so on. Can someone talk a little bit about that, process of setting priority?
Right, that continues to be the plan that the vaccine advisory group laid out. The faster that we can make sure the eligible population now from phase one and the over 75 have exposure to the vaccine, the faster we can get to the 65 plus and people with two medical conditions. So where are we? There are 324,000 75 plus residents. I think we're around 200,000 vaccinated. I believe that's what I heard the governor say yesterday. Jana will correct me if I'm wrong on that. There are about 500,000 residents between 65 and 75. Now, you like me monitor all states, and some states have sort of let the 65 plus come one mall, and they're having a hard time getting appointments. Our phased approach is allowing more appointments to be made, and we have the capacity to do that through the call center and the website and your local effort. But we also want to make sure we're reaching a penetration level within that category. So we've got a little more work to do with our over 75s before we can open up to 65 plus and people with medical conditions. Faster we get through that group, then we're looking at public workforce, including teachers and DPW workers and others. And we're evaluating how to sort of green light that part of this next phase. But we really want to focus together on the over 75, move efficiently to the 65 plus, get through that. It's a lot of people, 65 plus, and then we can open it up to the workforce.
Great, thank you. I think that the municipalities are very interested just because of the whole issue of schools and public works departments and employees that are out there.
We're not far off from being able to give you more information on that.
Thank you. There are a couple of questions regarding, I'll give just a plug. There's an important short-term issue regarding the extension for no questions, essentially no excuse, absentee voting, to extend that beyond March 31st. There are a number of comments in the chat. There are lots of communities that have elections in April and May, and we need to have an extension happen, not on March 30th, because then it doesn't make any difference for those elections. You need to really have enough lead time. So hopefully that legislation can be shaken loose at the State House and can be fast-tracked. That would be very helpful. And the MMA is giving that a priority as well, Lieutenant Governor.
Okay.
Just want to also raise a couple of questions since we have Sean Cronin here. Do you have a CARES Act fund update, Sean, with the extension of the deadline, with the FEMA reimbursement now able to be 100% instead of 25%? What's the next plans for providing clarity and a process for communities maximizing CARES Act funds?
Sure. There's obviously been a few very significant policy changes over the last 6 or so weeks. End of December was one of them. And then one of the executive orders President Biden signed. So ANF will have official guidance shortly. There's a couple of moving pieces that they're trying to get ironed out before anything official gets put out. But the FEMA piece that you mentioned, Jeff, that's 100% for vaccine related costs, not the other stuff. That's one of the questions that's still, they're still waiting. Mass and 49 other states are still waiting to hear final guidance from the feds. Because there is a chance that FEMA might be able to reimburse 100% of the PPE costs, et cetera. All those FEMA eligible expenses so far could be 100% reimbursable, which would then free up CARES Act money. So that's something A&F and other states are waiting to hear from the feds. But the thing to take away concretely is that the 100% reimbursability for the vaccination site costs, that's already out there. That's known. I do want to though mention a couple of other things. I know this is mostly a municipal audience, but we all know that cities and towns and schools need to work together when it comes to all things financial. And a reminder that there's ESSER II, which is another CARES Act program. I believe Massachusetts got about $800 million for school districts. It's running the Title I formula. If your community isn't familiar with it, go to DESE's website. They got a whole page. I was on it yesterday, dedicated to ESSER funds, significant amounts of money. And also know that, or recall that back over the summer, about $180 million of the coronavirus relief fund monies was basically given to DESE to run a school reopening program. Looking at some of the drawdowns to date, there's still money available in communities. So you might want to have discussions with your superintendent if you probably are anyway, but if you haven't recently, just maybe catch up with him or her to see where that drawdown stands. Because you've had ESSER I, you now have ESSER II, you had the school reopening. So there are some significant funds that have been made available for a whole host of things. And if you don't know, the ESSER is actually more, there's less restrictions to it than there is the CVRF funds. Have those conversations if you haven't had them recently. But in terms of the significant policy changes, A&F will have some additional guidance once they get those one or two outstanding questions answered.
Since the deadline for use of the CARES Act funds has been extended to December 31st, 2021, there was a specific question about the previous February reconciliation guideline or deadline with you.
Yeah, that A&F wants to get these final pieces answered before any official guidance is going out. But yes, former president signed back in December into law the extension through calendar 21. So, we know that's in place. But in terms of dates for reconciliation, or I know there's what's it, every other month or every quarterly, there's reports that got to go into A&F. Those are the schedules that they're going to be looking at now. And then there'll be some more official guidance on those.
Okay, thank you. And of course, we're all hoping that, Lieutenant Governor and Governor were with, and speaking with Congressman Neal, who's playing a lead role in the passage of another federal relief package. And we are hoping that there's a round of direct aid to the state government, to the Commonwealth, and to municipalities from this, the $1.9 trillion package. And that will just increase all of the work that DLS will be doing and the administration. We hope, if those funds pass, to be able to provide even more flexible and large sizes of aid that can help communities in many other ways as well. And so thank you for your leadership in collaborating with your partners across the country, governor's offices and so on, to help push for that federal aid package. Let's see, there was also a question about the reopening process. As I'm going through, so many of these comments are regarding vaccines. Again, we know that everyone from the administration will be reading these comments. Maybe that's why the chat blew up so much, and we have more comments in the chat for this session than any others. But there was a question just generally, we're still in step one of phase three. Is there any thought for the timeline of when that there might be further progression along the reopening process? In particular, there was someone that was interested in knowing whether or not this would happen in time for their outdoor water park in their region.
Okay, we do not have a timeline for activating step two of phase three or a time specific on the GAM limits. But as we have in the past, we continue to monitor the data and we will have decisions made relative to those next steps in the near future. I will continue to update all of you as we do that. We give this group advance notice on the effective dates of those next phases of reopening, and we will continue to do that. We just made this adjustment last week. We always like to evaluate over a 2 or 3 weeks period of time to see what impact that would have on our numbers before we do something else. That's typically how we've done it in the past.
Data-driven decisions. Well, hopefully the peak will remain behind us as you navigate the reopening process, and the data will continue to show good news. Jana, I'm going to ask if maybe you can even just unmute and say where, if communities want to follow up here by expressing interest in a regional site for vaccines, or find out where regional sites currently exist, where and the communities that are involved, who should they contact?
So the regional sites that are currently up on the map are available by going to the map. There are a number of these partnerships, and that could be found by looking at the clinic map on the mass.gov. If you did just for quick keywords, if you did COVID vaccine, mass.gov COVID vaccine, it takes you to the page and you can see the map and you can see all the different regional partnerships that they're not listed by community, but when you click on the different sites, they are. The red sites are the mass vaccination sites, so those aren't helpful, but a lot of the green ones and the yellow ones in particular are operated regionally or by municipalities at this moment. So that's a good way to look at that. And then if people are looking for regional locations for the state to operate sites, that's a different question. We've received some of those too, and those can you can send them to me, and I can forward them to the command center team who's looking at different locations. But if there's somebody who has a proposal that they would like to have considered for a regional site, like a municipally operated, local public health operated regional site, they can send that directly to me.
And how do they do that?
The local health departments know how to reach me, but I can put my email in here, but it really should be, I would. Yeah.
Through the local health department to go directly to you.
Please.
Okay. That's the, instead of multiple chains, multiple directions and so on. So
correct.
Have your local health department, they know how to reach Jana, have them reach out to Jana. There's so much here, Lieutenant Governor. It was vaccines today. Any closing words? We know that we'll be continuing this discussion.
No, I want to thank everyone for your participation in the chat. You find a number of questions and different ideas and thoughts about what we discussed in general today. Obviously, clarity, more specifics, guidance, and instruction is needed, and we understand that these are things we've been working on and they need to be properly communicated with you. And you can expect that is forthcoming.
Thank you.
In the meantime, Jana Ferguson's email and phone are going to be lighting up because there's a lot of work to do. Thank you, Jana, and your team of a few for your hard work, and to all the local boards of health and to all of you on this call. I know this is a challenging time. The needs of people relative to accessing vaccine are great. And this is a challenge for all of us. But I just want to assure you that we will continue to partner with you and do this. As Jana said, this is a public health effort. We all have to work on it together to safely and efficiently get the people of our Commonwealth access to the vaccines in a streamlined, efficient, organized process. And we appreciate your partnership and thank you for your thoughtfulness and chat today.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, and to the governor and to the whole team who's assembled here. what is the MMA's annual meeting was talking about leading through challenge and change. The level of stress at this stage of the pandemic is extraordinarily high. The steady, the calm dialogue, conversation, and commitment to moving forward as best as possible with cities and towns as full partners is deeply appreciated. And we look forward to seeing you and everyone here again in 2 weeks for the next briefing. And in the meantime, lots of communication and collaboration.
Yes.
So go to the MMA website for a recording of this to share with your colleagues. We'll have a summary posted, and the chat is being shared with all members of the administration. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for your leadership. Be safe and be well.
Thank you.